I want you to open your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 65, and if you can, the parallel passage in 2 Chronicles 7, verse number 8. Now, this chronological information came right at the tail end of our time last time. I ran myself out of time, and so we really need to reestablish what I was talking about at that moment. The 1 Kings passage, chapter 8, verse 65, says, "So Solomon held the feast at that time, and all Israel with him, a great assembly from Lebo Hamat," just think the north part of the Promised Land, "to the brook of Egypt," think south part of the Promised Land, "before he who was our God 7 days." Now that's our English Standard Version translation that we're using right now. But if you're using some of the older Bible translations, English Bible translations like the King James and New American Standard, you will have something different. And that something different actually represents the Hebrew text at this point. It says that they did this celebration 7 days and then 7 more days for a total of 14 days. And so what I was explaining is we already knew that all of this is happening in the 7th month of the Jewish year, and that it was in relationship to the feast of that month, which is called Sukkot, or Feast of Booths, or Feast of Tabernacles. And we know when the Feast of Tabernacles happens in the 7th month. It starts on the 15th. It goes 7 days specifically, and then there is an 8th finish-up day, a special assembly day. And then everybody gets to go home. We actually see that mentioned in the 2 Chronicles passage. Let's read there. Verse 8 of chapter 7, 2 Chronicles. "At that time Solomon held the feast for 7 days, and all Israel with him, a very great assembly from Lebo Hamat to the brook of Egypt. And then on the 8th day," that's the 8th day connected to the Feast of Tabernacles. It's the 22nd day of the 7th month every single year. "On the 8th day, they held a solemn assembly, for they had kept the dedication of the altar 7 days and the feast 7 days. And then on the 23rd day of the 7th month, he sent the people away to their homes, joyful and glad of heart for the prosperity that he who is had granted to David and to Solomon and to his Israeli people." So by comparing these two parallels back and forth, we now understand the chronology of the dedication. They began the ceremony on the 8th day of the 7th month. And that's the day that the fire fell, when they brought the Ark of the Covenant into the holy place and God's glory cloud filled the shrine building. And then Solomon prayed his prayer and blessed the people. And then fire fell from God onto the altar of sacrifice. That all happened on the 8th day of the month. And then they spent 7 additional days going through daily ceremonies, just like happened back at when the tabernacle was first dedicated, giving special sacrifices to dedicate the temple to God's service. This is the whole reason that when Judas Maccabee rededicated the temple in the 2nd century BC, that Hanukkah was 8 days long, because it takes 8 days of ceremony to officially dedicate an altar. All right, so got all that understood. So they finished the 7 days of dedication, the 8 days of dedication in time for them to kick off the Feast of Tabernacles. And then they finish the Feast of Tabernacles on the 22nd, and then everybody heads home on the 23rd. And now the temple is fully functional as a place of worship and prayer and sacrifice and forgiveness. That brings us then to a very famous passage in 2 Chronicles chapter 7. Verse number 11 says this: "Thus Solomon finished the house of He Who Is and the king's house." Now, that is a catch-all statement. Not only did Solomon build the temple and then dedicate it, he is also responsible for building his palace complex and finishing it and dedicating it. But that hasn't started yet. So the author of Chronicles, the author of Kings, at this point, kind of both get ahead of the story. The story that we're really talking about still is the dedication of the temple. So continue. All that Solomon had planned to do in the house of He Who Is, that's where our focus still is, and in his own house, he successfully accomplished. Now, verse 12 is all about what happened immediately after Solomon sent everybody home after the dedication of the house. It says, "Then He Who Is appeared to Solomon in the night and said to him." Now, the parallel over in 1 Kings 9:2 says, "He who is appeared to Solomon a second time as he appeared to him at Gibeon." So it's related to that earlier dream that he had about wisdom. So what we're seeing in our 2 Chronicles passage is God's response to Solomon's dedication of the temple. Remember, he had asked, "God, please accept this place as a place of prayer, as a place of relationship." And so God wants him to know, "I have." I mean, he's already seen the glory cloud. He's already seen the fire come from heaven. But God wants to make it exceptionally plain and reinforce some of the things that Solomon prayed about. So, 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 12, God's words: "I have heard your prayer and have chosen this place for myself as a house of sacrifice." So yes, this is my palace. This is my temple. This is the place where I want people to come and seek me out through the means of the sacrificial system. Verse 13, "When I shut up the heavens so that there is no rain." Now that's exactly one of the scenarios that Solomon mentioned in his dedicatory prayer. So God is going to go over several more of those specific scenarios. "Or command the locusts to devour the land, or send pestilence among my people." So what's all that about? Sin. It's related to things in the Mosaic Covenant, particularly the book of Deuteronomy, the blessing and cursing passage. God said, "If you keep the covenant, I'll bless you. If you don't keep the covenant, I will curse you. I will have bad things happen to you to bring you back, to make you realize you're off track." And some of those things would be drought and insect plagues, and then also sickness plagues. Now, that is the background for a very famous memory verse. A memory verse that our Christian community here in the United States have adopted as the theme verse for the day of prayer several different times. And I want to offer this caution that this verse, verse 14, 2 Chronicles 7:14, is specifically for Israelis living in the time of Solomon. But the principle, yes, can be applied to Christians living in any time period that have been engaged in sinful activity and have felt the judgment of God in circumstances. Okay? So understand, I don't believe that you can claim this as a promise specifically for the United States of America, because it wasn't addressed to the United States of America, or England, or India, or any other place that has had Christianity at some point as the religion of the people. Okay? This is specifically for the Israelis that have entered into the covenant with God. If my people, who are called by my name, humble themselves. Now that phrase carries with it the idea of confessing sin, repenting of that sin, which you know means to change the way you think about things, bring it back into alignment with the way God thinks about it. It even sometimes can refer to fasting. So, if my people, the Israeli people, who are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. So that is clearly about them repenting of sin. Then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. So that was God's promise to King Solomon for the people of Israel after the temple had been dedicated. And everybody understood that the temple was the place to repair relationship with God. Verse 15, now my eyes will be open and my ears attentive to the prayer that is made in this place. That is tied exactly into the wording of Solomon at the end of his dedicatory prayer. For now I have chosen and consecrated this house that my name may be there forever. Now the word forever here should be understood perpetually. The temple will eventually be destroyed, and his name will not be attached to a temple that is no longer in existence. So God is saying, for as long as I allow this place to remain, my name will be associated with it. My eyes and my heart will be there for all time. But as for you, if you walk before me as David your father walked, doing according to all that I have commanded you and keeping my statutes and my rules, then I will establish your royal throne as I covenanted with David your father, saying, you shall not lack a man to rule Israel. So once again, God turns the conversation back to this conditionality for the Solomonic dynasty, that it is only if Solomon and his descendants behave themselves by God's standards that they get to continue on the throne of Israel. And we know from information that comes up later that eventually a curse is put on the Solomonic dynasty, that no one from that genetic line will ever again sit upon the throne of Israel because of sin, because of failure to keep relationship with God. Now, some of you are like, what? Well, wait a second. But Jesus is from the Solomonic dynasty. No, he's not. Yes, legally, the Solomonic dynasty, through his adopted father, Joseph, gets attached to Jesus. But Jesus doesn't have a drop of Solomon blood in him as a human being, because he is descended through Mary by means of the virgin birth, and Mary is a direct descendant of Solomon's baby brother, Nathan. And you can go back and check the genealogy in Luke, which is Mary's genealogy, and you will see that that is the case. So just some things to connect the dots whenever we come to this passage, that Solomon was warned misbehavior in his dynasty would terminate it, and it did. Verse 19 continues, "If you turn aside and forsake my statutes and my commandments that I have set before you, and you go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will pluck you up from my land that I have given you, and this house that I have consecrated from my name, I will cast it out of my sight, and I will make it a proverb and a byword among all peoples." Now, you can tell in the wording there that we have a sudden shift from what would happen to Solomon and his descendants losing their dynasty to what will happen to the Israeli people themselves if they also fail to keep the covenant. And that becomes a little bit more clear, I guess is the way to put it, over in the 1 Kings passage. 1 Kings, let's reread some of the things said to Solomon. 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 3. "I've heard your prayer and your plea, which you've made before me. I've consecrated this house that you've built by putting my name there forever. My eyes, my heart will be there for all time. And as for you, if you will walk before me as David, your father, walked with integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you and keeping my statutes and my rules, then I will establish your royal throne over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. But if you turn aside from following me, you or your children, and don't keep my commandments and my statutes that I've set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land that I've given them, and the house that I have consecrated for my name I will cast out of my sight. Israel will become a proverb and a byword among all peoples, and this house will become a heap of ruins." So this was a warning to Solomon personally, but also as the leader of the Israeli people, that after all of this spectacular building and dedication of this grand palace to God, this grand temple to God, if they turn around and quit doing things his way, all this labor has been in vain, as Psalm 127 said, because God will cause this building to be trashed. It will be eradicated from the landscape. And we already know historically that that's exactly what happened in 587 BC. This temple is so grand that if it had survived beyond the 6th century BC, it no doubt would have become one of the wonders of the world, the wonders of the ancient world. But it was erased from history in the 6th century BC. And so it didn't have a chance to make that list. Furthermore, in the King's passage, it says this: everyone passing by it, that is, by the ruins, by where it used to be, will be astonished, and they will hiss, and they will say, why has he who has done this to this land and to this house? And then they will say, it's because they abandoned he who is their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt and laid hold on other gods and worshiped them and served them. Therefore, he who is has brought all this disaster on them. And so this is something that we need to remember when we come eventually, with God's permission, to the passages describing the destruction of the temple. Because we are prone to focus on the Babylonians destroying the temple. How they tore it down, not leaving any element. It looked like a plowed field after they were done with it. They melted down all of the bronze and carried away a lot of the wealth represented in the sacred objects. Some of them end up being returned later because they're stored in the temples of the gods of the Babylonians up in Babylon. But it's actually God that did that. The Babylonians were just his agent. And it will be made clear by the prophets writing in that time period, speaking in that time period of the destruction of the temple. It was because of the sins of Israel that that happened. Okay, and so that's exactly what it says right here. At this point, I think I want us to go to 2 Chronicles chapter number 8, verse 12. And this is kind of an overarching description of how regular temple worship began. So it says, Solomon offered up burnt offerings to who he is on the altar of he who is that he had built before the vestibule. Remember, the vestibule is that great big tower at the front. As the duty of each day required, offering according to the commandment of Moses for the Sabbaths, the new moons, and the three annual feasts, that'd be unleavened bread, Pentecost, Feast of Weeks, and Sukkot, or Feast of Booths. So this is the way that the writer of Chronicles says, and so once the dedication was done, everything settled down at Solomon's command into there being the two mandatory sacrifices each day, one in the morning, one in the evening. Then there's all the other sacrifices that happen by people, each and every day. But then there is the special sacrifice that happens on the Sabbath day each week, the special sacrifices that happen on the first of each month, then the special sacrifices that happen with the three mandatory festivals. So everything is now happening exactly as is required in the sacred schedule. Verse 14, according to the ruling of David his father, he appointed the divisions of the priests for their service and the Levites for their offices of praise and ministry, each before the priests as the duty of each day required, and the gatekeepers in their divisions at each gate. You remember that David handed off to Solomon not just the design of the temple complex, he also gave him the structure of a worship service or worship schedule, that we've got 24 priestly divisions, 24 Levitical divisions, and each division is going to serve 1 week at a time, twice every year. And so that's what's being described here, is that Solomon started that cycle. Verse 15, and they did not turn aside from what the king had commanded the priests and the Levites concerning this matter and concerning the treasuries. Because, of course, they've got a lot of the dedicated gifts given to the temple that may not have been used in the building of the temple. They are now in the secure storage areas, and some of the Levites are actually guards for all of that. Thus was accomplished all the work of Solomon from the day of the foundation of the house of He Who Is was laid until it was finished. And so the house of He Who Is was completed. So we are now done with the building of the temple, its dedication, and the establishment of worship services from here until the temple is destroyed. And now Solomon's kingdom becomes famous. You can turn to 1 Kings chapter 4, I think, at this point, and we've only got a few seconds left, so we will probably only barely introduce this. 1 Kings 4:29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and breadth of mind like the sand of the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the peoples of the East, all the wisdom of Egypt. So Solomon now settles into his role as the wise man of the Israeli Empire. And that is where we will go next, by looking at his Proverbs and seeing also how the community celebrated him as their leader.